The attack up Missionary Ridge is the most successful example of a frontal assault against a strong position in the entire war, as I said earlier. There's no question about that. The overall battle of Chattanooga was not especially bloody. There were not quite 6,000 Union casualties and a shade more than 6,500 Confederate casualties. Many of those Confederates were prisoners captured in the wild flight from Missionary Ridge. Now, these losses are small by Civil War standards. They're very small if compared to, for example, to the losses at Chickamauga that had come in the previous battle in this theater. Very small. But the battle itself was important. Chattanooga is now irretrievably lost to the Confederacy. It had been lost when Bragg abandoned it, but it seemed that the Confederates were about to retake it in the wake of Chickamauga. Now there's no chance that that is going to happen. Absolutely none. It is gone. At the same time that it is gone, James Longstreet was experiencing nothing but frustration in his effort to retake Knoxville. There's no chance that Knoxville is going to come back to the Confederates either. Whatever Longstreet's talents, and he had a number of talents, independent command was not one of them, and he showed that without any area left open for debate in his mishandling of his attempt to recapture Knoxville from Ambrose E. Burnside. He mounted a very ineffective siege. He launched silly frontal attacks. He began to argue, Longstreet did, with key subordinates, including Lafayette McLaws, one of his old friends. In fact, he arrested key officers in his army. Longstreet just pretty much fell apart in his independent operation against Knoxville. That city's gone. Chattanooga is gone forever. Those rail connections between Virginia and the Western Confederacy, they're severed, and the Confederates are not going to be able to put them back into position at any time during the war. So all those big Tennessee cities, as we mentioned last time, are gone, Memphis and Nashville and Chattanooga and Knoxville. This battle also completed that wonderful string of Union victories that had begun in the East and West at Gettysburg and Vicksburg and Port Hudson. A Tullahoma campaign also should be added to that list. Now there had been an unqualified Confederate disaster in every one of the theaters. Gettysburg in the east, Vicksburg on the river, and now Chattanooga in the Tennessee, North Georgia theater. This completely reversed the trend that had been in place the preceding May, when things seemed to be going so badly for the Federals in almost all of the theaters, when Grant seemed frustrated and stymied in his effort to capture Vicksburg, when Hooker's army had been thrown back across the Rappahannock in the Battle of Chancellorsville, and when there was nothing going on in Tennessee that gave any indication that the Federals were going to win there. You had that picture in place in May of 1863, and now by the end of the year, by the end of November, there is Union success across the entire board. It is really an impressive change in the strategic picture. This battle also brought important changes of leadership in both armies. Braxton Bragg finally was removed from command of the Army of Tennessee. He very forthrightly conceded to Davis, and I'll quote him here, "The disaster admits of no palliation and is justly disparaging to me as a commander. I fear we both erred in the conclusion for me to retain command here after the clamor raised against me." Braxton Bragg is out of Army command. Very reluctantly, Jefferson Davis picked Joseph Johnston to replace him. That must have almost killed Davis to do that, as deeply as he disliked Joseph Johnston. Now, Bragg doesn't disappear from the scene. Bragg isn't thrown out into purgatory somewhere. He goes to Richmond, where he becomes Jefferson Davis's principal military advisor. He takes up the job that Robert E. Lee had had just before the 7 days. He'll be behind a desk in Richmond, but he will be right at Jefferson Davis's elbow, and he'll be on the scene right to the end of the war. He'll take the field again very briefly, right almost at the end of the war in North Carolina. But between Chattanooga and then, he will mainly be a desk general. On the Union side, Ulysses S. Grant was confirmed as the preeminent Northern soldier without question. Now, he probably had already been that after he captured Vicksburg. But now there's no question. No question. Less than 3 months later, he would be given command of all United States armies. For now, he's just commander still of all United States forces between the Appalachian Mountains and the Mississippi River. But Chattanooga would propel him to an even higher level, and that is the level as general-in-chief. We'll talk about that in a future lecture. Now, other men also moved up with Grant, other soldiers who were successful at Chattanooga. George H. Thomas, commander of the Army of the Cumberland, would now be a major figure in the Western War for the remainder of the conflict. He'd be a subordinate of Sherman's, and then he would be an independent army commander on his own. He'll command the Army of the Cumberland for the rest of the war. William Tecumseh Sherman, also part of the victorious team at Chattanooga, he will end up as the principal Union commander in this theater, in this very important Tennessee, North Georgia theater. And Philip Henry Sheridan, also one of Grant's inner circle, he will move up with Grant as well, and he'll move on east when Grant goes. These four men, Grant and Sherman and Sheridan and Thomas, will be, as I've mentioned once before, the great quartet of Union war heroes at the end of the war. They will overshadow all others. Grant clearly the most important, Sherman clearly second, but Sheridan coming third and Thomas coming fourth. And the three besides Grant were all subordinates of Grant's at Chattanooga, all marked for enlarged duties just as Grant was. These four men among them would do more than any other military figures to win the war for the United States over the remainder of the conflict. So we'll leave Chattanooga now, and in fact we'll leave the military arena now. We've had a long run of lectures on military events in 1863. A lot was happening in 1863. All those military events culminating in this stirring Union success at Chattanooga. Next time we'll shift away from the battlefield and we will devote a lecture to the diplomatic front. We'll see how Union and Confederate diplomatic relations played out with Great Britain and France and other great powers.